Saturday, May 24th, people around the world will commemorate the ongoing struggle of Africans for self-determination. African Liberation Day. Presenters include Horace Campbell, Chief Anthony Inahoro, Ilombe Brass, Dennis Akumu, Professor Taiwo Agunade, and special guest Rakia Omar of African Rights based in London. That's African Liberation Day, Saturday, May 24th at 1 p.m. at Medgar Evers College. For more information, call 212-663-3805 or 212-330-8277.
And it's just about 8 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. And it being Tuesday night, that means it's time for Off the Hook. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear in the distance our theme is being played at an incredibly fast speed. So what we're going to do is play it in the other machine, and hopefully it hasn't been damaged by that traumatic experience. It's Off the Hook. Ironically, the program about technical foul-ups and blunders and things like that. Never the result of human error. But in the subject of humans, there's quite a few of them out there, and they're targeting all kinds of computers, causing all kinds of mayhem and mischief. Here's a couple of stories. The U.S. Defense Department was targeted last month in a massive cyber attack that hit more than 600 computer systems, a specialized publication reported on Friday, citing an FBI official. An FBI watch center that specializes in computer crimes was alerted to the attack, which occurred 2 weeks ago, and notified its 56 FBI offices around the country. According to the publication known as Inside Defense Information and Electronics, they were able to stop it before any great damage was done, according to Teresa McClurg, a computer scientist with the center. She was quoted as saying this week at a conference in McLean, Virginia. It was primarily aimed at DOD systems and a small number of others. Of course, there's no details in that story whatsoever. It's just what exactly they're talking about. They say basically that somebody tried to hack them 600 times, and we believe it. Fascinating. Well, here's a story about the consequences of that kind of behavior. Actually, not even that kind of behavior. If University of Iowa President Mary Sue Coleman's email password was something obvious like Herky, it's not what allowed UI freshman Joseph Hensel to read her private messages. Hensel, who will be charged with 2,389 charges of electronic eavesdropping, including reading Coleman's mail, did not crack passwords in order to gain access to the personal accounts, according to personal computer services manager Christine Peretz. Hensel discovered a way to exploit a bug in a command in a software program. The intrusion was detected by security measures. The incident involved software that comes with the system when you buy it. There was no evidence any account or password was compromised. Now, nobody in their right mind really thinks that this guy read 2,389 different pieces of email. But the way this has been unfolded, it appears to be exactly what happened. In addition to the eavesdropping charges, Hensel will also be charged with 3 counts of criminal trespassing and 3 counts of criminal mischief. It's just unbelievable. Of course, he can get all kinds of penalties for 2,389 counts of electronic eavesdropping. I somehow think the people prosecuting don't really understand what it is they're talking about anymore. In a high security complex laden with computers, the United States Air Force is doing battle with silent and invisible enemies. that many fear could wreak havoc on the country's security without ever firing a shot. The foes include computer hackers or others who aim to penetrate or destroy computer systems and databases that are the technological backbone of the U.S. military and make it the most powerful in history. Yes, computer hackers sit around aiming to penetrate and or destroy computer systems and databases. That's what it's all about. Stories like this get printed and they become gospel. This comes from the Christian Science Monitor. The formation of the squadron underscores a growing apprehension in the American defense establishment. The concern is that military computers, as well as the systems that run vast portions of the country's communications, power, and commercial infrastructure, may be susceptible to attack by foreign powers. All hackers, incidentally, are in the pocket of foreign powers. Just figured we'd add that in. Here we go again. There are already ample grounds for concern. This is the story from the Christian Science Monitor. Experts point out that in 1995, the Defense Department detected at least 250,000 efforts to hack into its databases. Many are believed to have been successful. Now, we spent a good deal last year talking about that 250,000 figure, and it turns out it was internal. It was the Defense Department testing itself, and a number of times it was able to succeed. It basically ballooned that out and said, well, there must be this many real people trying if we were able to do it this many times. And now look, it's gospel. This is the truth. It's fact. 250,000 fictitious people someplace were trying to get in. It's unbelievable. It just keeps happening. Almost makes you think that the media just isn't as sharp as we give them credit for. I don't know. How about this one? Terrorists target the net. Yes. This from some zine someplace called TechWire. God knows where that comes from. Something on the internet. Terrorist groups are looking to launch net-based attacks on the computer networks of governments and businesses, according to speakers at an international security conference in Brussels last Thursday. I think I know what conference this was. I think I know. This is the one that cost something like $1,200 to get into? Yeah, I think so. And they had like a couple of pseudo-hackers there, too, that supposedly were going to talk about what real hacking is all about. Undoubtedly, this is the kind of thing that was said there. Terrorist groups are likely to use the internet increasingly to raise funds and disseminate propaganda and misinformation because the internet gives terrorists a way to get their message heard across the world and to share information on a worldwide basis. Of course, I'm reading this from someone who wanted to get this message heard across the world and share it on a worldwide basis, and they succeeded because look at me, I'm reading it over the radio. Organizations such as the Irish Republican Army and the Lebanese-based Hezbollah fundamentalist group already have web pages. Web pages, can you imagine that? Hezbollah with web pages. Oh boy. Where supporters can access documents and communicate with militants through email. That's right. They're not blowing things up. They're sitting in front of terminals now communicating. But some of these groups are looking at more sinister uses for the net. The next step. Oh, I won't tell you what the next step is. That's a trade secret. We can't tell you that. All right, no, I will. That's what they said at this $1,200 conference, so I guess we sort of have to tell you. The next step, which some terrorist organizations are already considering, is to use the net to launch information warfare attacks. Here we go again. Anytime you hear information warfare, that's this phrase that was coined by, you know, about three people in the world, and they all have something to sell that goes along with this quote-unquote information warfare. It's interesting how that particular phrase has become used in the halls of Congress, how everybody now talks about information warfare and how it has to be battled. All kinds of weirdness. I think this is part of information warfare. It's very subtle. Anyway, information warfare involves monitoring or crippling an enemy's IS. Yes, and communications infrastructure using techniques ranging from hacking through wiretapping to the physical destruction of computers and networks. Attacking computer systems rather than physical targets has several advantages for terrorist groups. These attacks would cause economic damage while allowing less chance of capture than planting a bomb. They could generate good publicity The skills needed for the attack can be bought from hackers. Oh, yeah, no problem. We sell these kind of things all the time. And the threat of these attacks could be used to extort money from potential victims. One of the IRA websites has a discussion thread in which they are openly discussing the way in which the IRA could use information warfare to attack the British establishment. The tools for them to use are out there on the Internet. All they have to do is download them. This type of terrorism could happen in 2 or 3 years' time. I'll tell you, you know, if taking down a website is an alternative to blowing up a bus, I guess it's a close call in the eyes of the government. But we'll keep you updated as we sell more bits of information to terrorist groups all around the world. Okay, now, a couple of fun facts. First of all, Fiber Optic is not here this week. He is away on assignment. We can't say where he's away on assignment to, but that's because of the nature of the assignment. But he is away on assignment. And he won't be reporting back until he has something to report back. Probably next week, though. But we do have some technological advances that we wish to share with the folks. First of all, some personal news. News of a personal nature. I found out today that I'm one of the few. Last week I was talking about this. I was talking about the whole digital satellite thing, DSS. I found out that I can actually get it this week. Had somebody come out and take a look and see if all the buildings and trees and other objects were causing too much of, of blockage. And just barely was I able to clear the mess and have an actual view of a satellite. So that means, if I choose to do this, that I'll be able to get all these incredible channels of home shopping and sports and test patterns and all the other neat things that are so in vogue these days. And if that's the case, of course, we'll have to figure out a way to play around with those things. See just what you can do with them. See if there's ways around various security systems and things like that. And, of course, we'll be sharing whatever information we find. Now, the other big technological advance is DVD, which we've been talking about here for quite some time. Digital versatile disc. And, you know, we started talking about this last year, and we made some phone calls this year. And when we did that, we talked to a few people at various stores who had no idea what we were talking about at all. No idea. And now everybody knows about it. You go into certain record stores, you see DVD displays. People actually, I bet if we call Radio Shack now, they would know what we were talking about if we asked if they had DVDs. Unbelievable. Well, let's read a couple of things from this Sony DVD pamphlet. As the original CD created a revolution in audio, DVD is destined to set new standards for both home video and multimedia. Nearly 133 minutes of full-motion video on a single-sided disc, and they can be double-sided. Picture quality that approaches the D1 studio production standard. Over 500 lines of horizontal picture resolution. Choice of PCM stereo sound or Dolby Digital multi-channel surround sound. Supports letterbox, pan, and scan or 16:9 formats, and features up to 8 language soundtracks and 32 subtitles. DVD will also support other new creative applications in the future, such as the ability to view scenes shot at multiple camera angles, dual-layer single-sided discs that provide more than 12 times the capacity of current CDs, and recordable, rewritable, and high-definition media. Like CD, DVD is 120 millimeters in diameter and 1.2 millimeters thick. Like CD, DVD can offers instant random access that no tape format can match. Like CD, DVD is highly durable and tolerant of dirt, dust, and fingerprints. DVD can hold 4.7 gigabytes of data per layer compared to 680 megabytes of data on a CD. And for even greater storage capacity, DVD offers dual-layer and double-sided disc options. Each DVD disc is composed of two 0.6 millimeter substrates that have been bonded together to improve rigidity. Amazing. Well, we have on the phone with us 2600 correspondent Scott Skinner, who actually has moved into the world of DVD, has experienced this firsthand. I have to admit, I talk a lot about it, but I'm afraid to actually take that step and play around with it. Scott, you've actually experienced this, have you not?
Yes. Okay. Good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing? Now, tell us, is it every bit as good as they say it is?
Yes. Yeah. I guess I should just begin with my qualifications. I'm basically a guy who hangs out with other guys who enjoy DVD players. And what they do is they buy them and test them and return them to buy others to test those to return those in turn. So I've had the chance to sort of see two of them, the two most popular models on the market right now, which is the Sony, the one you just were reading about, and the Panasonic model. And the first time I, the first one we saw, the Panasonic, I was actually disappointed because there was a lot of there's a lot of things going on that we didn't understand at first. For instance, some of the fade outs looked horrible, and there was the picture quality wasn't as good as it should have been. And it later turned out that it has a lot to do with what sort of TV you're using it with, and how you're feeding the signals into the TV. So later on, when those problems were corrected, it was what we were expecting, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, Emmanuel, but I've been sort of waiting for this to come around for like 10 or 15 years.
I've been waiting a lot longer than that. I've known that something is wrong with the way we currently view things on TV and on videotapes. I knew there had to be something better.
I knew back in the 80s when the best you could buy was basically a Laserdisc, and anyone just looking at a Laserdisc back then knew that something was wrong.
Yeah, it's
this
too
was
big.
Not the way.
It's too big. It looks too much like one of those outdated records, and it just isn't right.
And so we waited and waited, and finally... those smart people in Japan or whatever, they created the technology, I guess in America as well.
Well, the people in America are trying to keep that technology from being too free and open, and trying to figure out ways of preventing things from being copied and freely distributed.
I think, as usual, how it works is we usually pioneer the technology, and then Japan does something useful with it.
Well, I'm not sure exactly, you know, how we trace the lineage of this thing, but what I'm most interested in right now is what's it like to actually play around with this thing? What can you do? What
sure.
can you not do?
Okay, well, but the first thing it really depends on how good your system is. The video is obviously much better than anything you've ever experienced. It has 500 raster lines. It's greater saturation, dynamic range. But apart from that, the audio is even better. The problem is, in order to take advantage of the audio, you need to have a very nice surround sound setup to handle the Dolby Digital or AC3 or whatever method you're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
We're going way beyond stereo now. We're talking about 6 channels of sound. So you're completely surrounded by sound, and it's nothing less than a theater experience. And in some ways, it's better than a theater. And it almost makes the screen, because you're probably using this with, say, a 27-inch monitor television or less, it sort of dwarfs the screen when you're experiencing the full sound. Sort of like the screen doesn't match what you're hearing. It's too small. You're expecting like a large screen or filling up an entire wall.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are just using, obviously, a regular TV, you're not going to get everything out of it that you should. But in terms of the picture quality, things you can do. The nicest thing about it is, number one, just knowing that when you play this DVD over and over again, there's no loss in quality, unlike a VHS, where every time you play it, you're basically killing the tape. And
right.
You're not getting the same picture.
Well,
so.
It's a little more like a CD now.
It's exactly like a CD. When you buy the individual movies that you see in the stores right now, they're all indexed in different ways. They have, let's call them tracks, much like a CD, a music CD has tracks. And you can skip ahead instantly to different parts of the movie. Sometimes the indexes make sense, and sometimes they don't. You can also program your own. So if you want to give a demonstration, you can just set up your own track and go right to that area of the movie. And you can even set up 2 points and have it loop automatically, which is kind of nice. So they're all nice digital features like that.
But they don't yet have a system where you can actually write yourself. You can record over. They don't have that yet, do they?
My understanding is there's nothing commercially available, and certainly not for the average consumer that can record DVD to DVD. There are no DVD burners yet, but that's on the horizon. That's about one year away, or one and a half years away.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like everything else, it's going to come out being very expensive, and then it'll probably go down after a while, just as DVD players will.
Mm-hmm.
The features also include... What they claim about the language is totally true. You can have things like you can be hearing French with German subtitles, for example, which is just like, you know, at the touch of the button, you can just change from one to another.
So you can actually have different dubbing, and you can have different subtitles.
Exactly. And it's great for learning languages, although the subtitles, you know, may not be exactly what they're saying, but it's interesting to hear it mm-hmm. and see it on the screen.
What about the different camera angles? Have they introduced that yet?
No, they haven't. I haven't seen anything like that. I do know that's a possibility, and they've been talking about that for a while. I don't believe there's anything commercially available right now to really show off that feature. And I'm not sure if that's a software feature or something in the hardware. So I really don't know too much about that.
How about other uses for DVDs, such as for audio, DVD-ROM,
yeah.
that kind of thing?
Right now, you should be careful about what you buy, because not all DVD players will play, for instance, CDRs, recordable CD discs.
That's an important distinction. Now, I think we should point out to people, what is the difference between a CDR and a CD-ROM?
Okay.
A lot of people don't even know there is a difference.
Yeah. CD-ROM is, of course, a CD for your computer that holds data. And a CDR is a blank recordable CD in which you can put anything, be it data or music. And you sort of have to decide, or actually you can do both now. And indeed, you can go to the record stores and you can buy... See, that distinction is almost being blurred now by the industry, because you can go into, say, HMV or someplace, and you can buy a CD that's basically an audio CD, but you can pop it into your computer too, and then you can see videos of the bands. So they do various tricks to get that to work, and so that distinction is being blurred as well. But right now, the Sony DVD player will read just about everything, CDRs including. So you can play a CD, you can put a CD-ROM on there. You're not going to see anything. I'm not sure how it handles that, because obviously it's data meant for a specific machine, a specific computer. But the audio CDs, all your audio CDs will work. So you can pop in your audio CD and basically use your DVD player as a CD player as well. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Your the ones in the future will read every format. If it's the same size and it's a disc, it will read it and play it or do something with it.
Well, I kind of wonder why they didn't start out that way.
I'm not sure either. The Sony will read CDRs, and the Panasonic won't. And I think it's just probably different chips, different manufacturers' priorities in trying to get the product out versus features.
Okay, and as far as getting the product out, what is out there right now?
They're pretty good. I would say they're expensive, but for what you get, it's nice. The Sony is the better of the two, and there's more than two, but those are, I think, the two best-selling units right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Sony has better built-in circuitry to handle the video, so it sort of has algorithms that make the video look a lot better than the Panasonic, and you notice a difference on the screen. And there are other differences, too, just in terms of the features and how it handles certain things, how it handles upgrading to even better audio. Than AC3 and digital Dolby. In the future, they'll have a 7 to 12 channel audio, if you can imagine that. I'm not even quadraphonic. I have stereo, and that's about it. And now we're talking about 12 channels of sound. So, I mean, I couldn't even find 12 parts of my room to put these things.
It's getting it's getting a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Definitely.
In the future, they're going to have, hopefully... the ability to hold more than one DVD in a unit, so you'll have sort of like carousel DVD units.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm waiting for, actually. Something that'll hold, say, 100 DVDs, and you can just switch between them as easily as you do with CDs.
Do you think it's ever going to reach the stage where you go and see a film in a theater, and instead of having the reels of film, they actually have a little tiny DVD showing you the picture?
Probably not. The reason being is because the DVD for all they claim as being very close to the D1 standard, it's compressed video. It's MPEG-2 compressed video, and so you're not getting the true video that you would in a film. And you would probably start to notice a lot of that, video artifacts, and you would start to notice the limitations of the machine once you blew it up to the size of a standard cinema screen. You'd start to see things that would indicate that this was not coming from film.
Well, now, okay, let's speak to those video files out there that have their huge screen TVs that fill up a wall of their homes. Well,
right.
Is this something that they're going to notice?
This is what they've been waiting for.
Okay, but will they notice, some sort of...
What they'll notice is a huge improvement over what they're using right now.
Even if their screen is huge?
Yeah, because if their screen is huge right now, they're using, at best, a laser disc player.
Okay.
And this is an improvement over that. So it can only get better for them.
Right.
Will they see anything at all? If you stand close enough, you might be able to see. You will see, in fact. You'll start to see banding, and you'll start to see certain artifacts, video artifacts. If you stand a reasonable distance away, it should all blend in, and you wouldn't notice that. Up to a certain point, you will notice that, and you'd have to stand farther away. So that's mm-hmm. the trade-off.
Mm-hmm. How is such things as freeze frames, skipping ahead?
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah, you can even do things like slow-mo backwards, which is a trick that some very expensive high-end VHS players do with flying tape heads. But this is really much nicer. It's interesting. They had difficulty trying to get fast-forwarding to preview the same way we're used to previewing it on a VHS VCR. And they've managed, I think, to do that admirably, more so in the Sony than the Panasonic. But yeah, you can do all sorts of things. You can, as I was saying before, you can set up two points and just loop endlessly between them. You can go backwards, forwards, very fast, very slow, skip instantly to another indexed track, all sorts of things like that. But you can't copy anything.
Yeah, now that's the thing. Now, if you play this thing, are you telling me you can't record onto a tape from DVD?
That's right. Right now, they use... And that was actually one of the things that held up the release of these units. They were concerned about copy protection. Basically, people, say, renting a DVD for a night and hooking it up to their VCR and then recording the movie, and then they have a nice copy of the movie. And other things I'm sure they were worried about. They used two methods, basically. Something called pseudo-sync pulse generation and color striping. And what those things do is, if you try to basically hook this up to your VCR and record it, you'll see a lot of colored garbage noise in the middle of your set, which is sort of like if you try to get cable without a cable decoder, that sort of thing. And you'll see a sort of pulsing going from dark to bright, like a sort of pulsing light going on and off. And together, those two things make it so that it's not worth viewing, let alone copying. So. And as far as the audio is concerned, you get none of that. That's not going to work either.
Well, you know, I mean, I think they're expending a little bit too much effort into this because, obviously, if you record something onto a tape from a DVD, it's not going to look as good. You're going to get all kinds of degradation. If the DVD is cheap enough, and they are pretty cheap now,
yeah.
I think they're only about $20.
I'm pretty happy with the prices so
people
far.
Will want to buy them, the original, get the packaging, all that kind of thing. So they don't really have to put all that much effort into this copy protection scheme if they make the original worth it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see the point because I think that... it's sort of like who goes out there and who I mean there are, I mean I'm sure there are a lot of people who still use tapes instead of buying CDs, but I don't think they're losing any money from hundreds of thousands of people, you know, say renting CDs from the library and making tape copies.
No, I mean, exactly. When cassettes were first introduced, the record companies went crazy saying that everyone's going to make tapes of their records and that was going to be the end of it. And
right.
of course, the record companies have thrived. The Hollywood industry has thrived after the introduction of video cassettes. So, I mean, they find a way to adapt.
Actually, people did do that, and I think it had less to do with trying to get something out of nothing than trying to make something, than trying to produce something the way you want it. I myself used to record my own CDs all the time because I wanted to make mixtapes, because I didn't have the ability to record digitally and make my own sort of mixes to take on the road. And I know a lot of people still do that. For tape players in a car, they'll make their own mixes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anything wrong with that. And I think possibly the same thing might happen in this case. You'll have people maybe taking various things off DVDs and putting them on VHS. The copy protection schemes, just to go back to that, they're in place, they work, but they're far from infallible. And I would venture to say that even now there's probably someone out there selling... some sort of filtered box, a black box that you can put between your DVD player and your VHS VCR to sort of cancel out those pseudo-sync pulse generations and color striping and all that other copy protection circuitry.
Well, we'll be sure to keep an eye out for such mischief and report it to the proper authorities. We're going to take some phone calls if you want to stick around, and hopefully people will actually talk about the subject this week.
Okay, great.
212-279-3400 is our phone number. We're talking about DVDs with 2600 correspondent Scott Skinner, who was one of the... well, you don't actually have one of your own, do you?
No, I don't.
Pretty much hop around to people's houses.
Yeah, I'm a guy who hangs out with other guys who do this sort of thing. I'm fortunate to know them. But my purchase is for next year. I'm going to hold out, and I'll let the more affluent of us sort of pave the way, and then next year I'll choose the best from what's out there.
Right, learn from other people's mistakes. That's how it works. Exactly. Okay, 212-279-3400. Let's take a couple of phone calls, see who's out there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to comment about the current discussion.
Yes.
Even though there's been enormous advances in the recording technology, the quality of the picture on the screen is still limited by our generation-old TV technology. That is, the number of pixels on the screen of a standard color TV set.
And
I wonder if you have any information about when that is going to improve to accommodate the new technology, recording technology.
I believe he's talking about NTSC versus PAL, is that right?
Yes, right.
NTSC versus anything.
And also the actual dots on the actual screen itself.
Right. I've heard rumors that this Christmas they're going to start producing TVs. This whole thing is colliding with high-definition TV, which is sort of the next big thing to hit us. And that still hasn't been resolved. But ideally, they'll start to have sets. Like right now you can buy a television that has 400 raster lines as opposed to the standard 300. And that's a slight improvement. And they tend to call those monitors instead of TVs. The way to get around it, if you want to take full advantage of the 500 raster lines and all that good stuff in the DVD, is to basically hook this up to nothing less than a computer monitor, which you can do. On the more expensive DVD players, they have composite RGB out, which goes right into your 17-inch monitor or your 21-inch monitor, and presto, you now have perfect 500 raster lines, the best quality you can get. If this were a perfect world, high-definition TV would consist of nothing less than the standard that's already been adopted by the computer industry. But I have a feeling we're going to end up with something less than that, which is unfortunate because it would be nice to be able to, in the future, just, say, attach something to your pre-existing monitors at home and have TV. Unfortunately, they're going to give us something less than that. That's unfortunate. The computer industry has been trying to fight that.
Yes, and what about those wide TVs, those extra-wide TVs?
I don't know anything about that. Haven't heard anything about that.
The screens, yes. Well, this is a fascinating show. Thank you for bringing this technology to the public and making it available. Otherwise, it's not available.
Okay, well, thanks.
Okay.
I think you might think that we invented it, but I'll take credit for that, sure. I think by the extra-wide TV, he meant high-definition TV, right?
I guess.
Extra-wide,
yeah.
So I think that's the same thing. Okay, 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, speak up.
Yes, Emmanuel?
Yes, go ahead.
My name is Gerald Fridella. My daughter was on the air with you about a month and a half regarding a 9X problem. I know it's off the subject. I'm looking for sanity at this point.
Looking for sanity, okay.
Looking for sanity. Did you receive that email?
Actually, I received so many emails, I can't remember this one off the top of my head. What exactly are we referring to?
All right, this is the one with the person who's disconnecting us, making calls all over the world.
Okay, yeah, I think I remember. It was about a month ago you called in and...
My daughter did, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And followed through...
I think we heard you in the background.
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
you
okay.
did.
I remember that now.
That was part of the problem. 9X has bowed out. The entire system has bowed out. We've come to an impasse at this point because since they have bowed out and the system has bowed out, our problems have been exacerbated. I'm looking for sanity. I have to find out how this is being done. 9X is evasive. They've stopped all investigations. They refuse to be cooperative.
Well,
I mean,
okay, you see, the thing is, all you have to do, all you are required to do is show that it wasn't you or anybody in your house. And I think that's easy enough to prove by simply saying where you are at the time the calls were made and being able to prove that. And it's up to 9X to prove the opposite. Now, they're not doing that, so you have to take it to a higher authority. You have to take it to Public Service Commission or one of these like big media type things that swoop down on the big corporations and make them cover up the camera with their hands.
Well,
that's the kind of attention they don't want.
WABC has turned it down. 2020. I mean, I'm a college-educated professional for 31 years. I mean, I'm not there to disprove hackers, to support or rebut anything they do. We've gone to the point where we have gone through this entire system, the FCC, the Attorney General, the District Attorney, Nassau District Attorney, had traps on our phones for 2 months. 2 months. And they trapped all the calls coming from four different people, three of whom were not even home. This technology involves the ability for this person to hop on a line, make phone calls, as if the phone calls was coming from the line he hops on.
I mean, there are ways of doing that, you know, ranging from hopping onto the telephone pole, going to someone's basement, or even being a phone company employee. That's possible, too.
How do you make a 9X tape?
How do you make a 9X tape?
The tape that comes on to say such and such a number in area code 516 is not in service right now.
Okay, that's something that the 9X system does for you.
Right.
If a certain number is flagged a certain way, a recording is generated.
But they're there. We just left the home. The tape says that the number's not in service.
Wait a minute. You're saying this is a different problem?
This is another phone problem.
Okay.
One truck.
Wow. Okay, so you're calling someone you know is there, and you're getting a recording saying that they don't exist.
Yeah, we're getting the tape saying that they're not there. So I would go across the street to my mom's house, pick up the telephone, and call right through. 2 days later, from calling across the street at my mom's house to try to call that house, all of a sudden the 9X tape comes on and tells us the number is not in service anymore.
It just says it's not in service?
It says, quote-unquote, such and such a number in area code 516 is not in service
anymore. Okay. Well, I mean, that kind of thing does happen a lot, where they put the wrong recording on or they disconnect a line for some reason. That's literally, you know, inputting certain keystrokes. That's all that is.
But I left my mom's house and went up to Carmen Avenue, Main Avenue near us, and put a quarter in and got right through to the house for a week and a half.
Same number.
Same number.
So what you're saying is from certain numbers it doesn't work.
I'm saying that that this person who has appeared on the line and threatened us and told us we're never going to find out who he is or how he's doing this is monitoring these lines. I work at the Nassau County Correctional Center.
Hang on 1 second. You say somebody came on and said that you're
appeared
never...
Appeared on the line.
This is the first I've heard this.
Yes.
Someone actually identified themselves and
they
said...
They did not identify themselves.
Well, I mean, they said that they exist and that they're the ones doing this.
Yes, sir. And not only would they not find out who he was or how he was doing it, but now the rest of my family would have problems. Appears on the line, burps, scrapes things across the phone, hangs up, disconnects us. All right? Now, when I went up to that payphone on Carmen Avenue and put the quarter in, it worked for a week until that 9X tape came on again saying the number wasn't in service anymore. But I went around the corner immediately and put a quarter in a different zone. And I got right through.
There's only so much we can do here. I mean, we can certainly, you know, sound this out and talk about this a lot. But if you want actual results, you need to get this out to the public and start making recordings of what's going on. I don't know why ABC didn't want the story, but I guarantee you there is, of all the TV stations we have around here, someone's going to jump on this, especially if you have evidence, you know, in the form of a tape or something. You show that to them and you play that for them. I think they'll jump at it. I think it'll be an interesting story because it sounds like somebody is, you know, has some sort of a vendetta against you, and they're into the phone system in some way and they're controlling things. And that's the kind of story that they kind of jump on. Listen, sir, we have to move on to another call, but best of luck to you. Keep us updated, will you?
All right. Listen, Manny, one more favor.
Yes.
Please, if you have any input from any of your listeners who are having the same problems, you have my address and everything in that email.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much, sir.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, if anyone has any information or hints, or if you yourself are doing something like that, please let us know, and we'll try to help this person. I've heard this kind of story many times, so it's not an isolated instance. You know, there's all kinds of potential havoc you can wreak with the phone system. Right, Scott?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Let's go back to the phones, 212-279-3400. We are talking about DVDs, so don't let that fool you. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up and turn down your radio.
Hey.
Yes, what's up?
Okay. Basically, last week, I think it was, you were talking a lot about, you know, caller ID and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
So I called the 2600 voice BBS.
Yes.
Right? And I do the caller ID thing. And basically it said that my phone, you can't give the number. And my aunt, she's got caller ID too, right?
Uh-huh.
And every time I call her, my phone doesn't show up. So, like, what's the deal? Why does it happen?
Okay, what was the exact message that you got when you tried to get your number?
I said, like, I think...
It was either blocked or it's not available. Which was it?
I think it was not available.
Okay, what that... Where are you calling from? What area are you in?
516.
516?
Yeah.
What town?
Oceanside.
You know, it's possible you might be... I mean, it's hard to believe, but there might actually be an area still on Long Island that doesn't... Are you allowed to have things like caller ID?
Yeah, we are. A lot of people around me have it.
Well, it's possible you were just dialing regular 7-digit number, right? You weren't routing it through a long-distance
call. Yeah, I didn't do star 67. I didn't do nothing.
Okay, you just dialed direct.
Yeah.
It sounds to me... Have you tried this more than once?
Well, I haven't tried it on the BBS, but my aunt has every time I call there, and, like, other people.
Uh-huh. Well... Tried a few more times with the BBS, but what I suspect is happening is that 9X, for some reason, isn't passing the data along. I don't know if they're not supposed to, if it's not cut in yet. It should be. I mean, do you live in, like, an old area?
No, and, like, most all our payphones are, like, totally hooked up because we used to have a lot of freaks around here, so, like, our phone system's totally updated.
Right. It sounds like 9X messed something up somewhere along the lines, and they can test this too. You can call them. And
I don't want to change it.
Well, okay, if you don't want to change it, then
cool deal.
You know, it's just kind of interesting. You can use it to your advantage, I guess.
Yeah.
Can people star 69 you? Did you try that?
I don't think so. I should try that. Yeah.
Call your aunt and see if she you know, star 69 works in two ways now. Either it'll ring directly or it'll announce your number before it actually rings it.
Yeah.
And if that works, that tells you at least, you know, part of the system is working. Your number is being transmitted in some way, but not through caller ID. But again, this relating to the show that we did last week, that had to do with OmniPoint phones and how there's a little hidden thing that they don't tell you about, where if you leave somebody a voicemail message, your number will be transmitted using a technology known as ANI. And even out there in Oceanside, your number would definitely be transmitted because ANI does not discriminate by type of switch or anything like that. So if you were to call someone on an OmniPoint phone, I think the way it would work, your number would not show up. It might show no number at all on their phone. But then when it went to voicemail, it would get your number through ANI, and it would definitely get it.
Yeah, it's kind of wacky.
Okay. Well, listen, good luck with that. Let us know what happens. Thanks for calling. And the important thing about that OmniPoint thing is that even if you block your number, star 67, it doesn't make any difference. Your number will get sent. It's not something to be very careful about. 212-279-3400. Be nice if somebody else talked about DVDs tonight. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Hey, how'd you get over there?
How'd I get I don't know.
You see, you're supposed to be over on this button here.
Oh, I am.
And, yeah, somehow you wound up. That's not your button. You want to try calling again and get on your button?
No, thanks, because I'm calling from a location here again.
You're calling from a location?
In Manhattan.
Ah. Uh-huh.
I wanted to mention...
I'm not sure what that means. Oh, wait a minute. You're not calling from that place you keep telling people to call from for nothing.
No. That place is closed at 5.
Okay, yeah, I figured as much.
I wanted to talk about...
Because that wouldn't be a smart thing to do.
Right. I'm listening to you on my Walkman, and I notice that when I walk in the street, it mixes in with other radio stations. I get, like, a lot of static. But
you have to walk right in the middle of the street in order to do that, to get it real... I'm sorry. Don't listen to me. I'm just in a bad mood.
But when I'm inside a restaurant or inside a building, it works. Why is that?
It depends on a lot of things. You know, it depends on where you are in relation to the Empire State Building.
No, I'm on 23rd Street and 7th Avenue.
Right now at this moment?
Yes.
Okay, everybody, you know what to do. yes. Again, it depends on all kinds of things, such as buildings, you know, getting in the way, creating ghosts, all kinds of multipath.
Or creating other stations cutting into 99.5.
All kinds of things. The quality of your Walkman. There's millions of ways of getting interference on an FM signal. Trust me, I know about this.
Okay. Now I'm inside a building. I'm inside a diner, and
right.
It works fine. When I go inside a building, it works fine. Why is that?
It depends, you know, on where the building is, where you are in the building. It depends on all kinds of things as far as the antenna strength. I mean, if you move around, and I can tell you this because there's certain stations, especially pirate stations, that you try to get in certain parts of the town, you have to move the antenna all over the place in order to pick it up. It depends on all kinds of things as far as line of sight. FM is primarily line of sight.
I'm 10 blocks from the antenna. Why? I mean, there shouldn't be...
If you drive... right past the Empire State Building. You won't get any radio station because while you're one block away, you're not line of sight of the transmitter, which is 100 floors up.
I see. And also, I'd like to tell you that this DVD thing, I was going to say something about the DVD thing.
I'm sure you were.
Yeah. I wanted to, it would be good to record. I mean, you have CDRs where you can record on the CD thing, CD burners. And why can't they have burners for, like, DVD burners so that, like, you could take your tapes and so that you could make your own CDs?
I think that's the intention, is it not, Scott?
Right. There will be. You just have to wait.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just be a little patient there.
Now, in terms of the person...
I think you just you just went into overtime, didn't you?
Well, I'm going to deposit a dime. So,
okay.
The person... Oh, did you get my email with that Bernie S. thing?
No. In fact, I get many pieces of email, but I did not see one from you, I don't think, unless you sent it while I was here.
No, I sent it, like, last week. It was a... Actually, yeah, I sent it last week, and it was a big WAV file, but... Hold on, please.
I can't say sure.
Excuse me.
Because, you see, what happens, you know...
You better listen to her. You better listen to her because she can terminate you. She can terminate you without a second thought. I heard it loud and clear. But she's still not satisfied. I'm afraid...
Well, all right, I'm still here.
Okay.
I sent you a 1 megabyte file, a sound file. I hope you got it.
This is really not of interest to the millions of people listening,
okay,
now, is
all
it?
Right. Now, the person who's listening on Long Island that has the trouble with the phone thing, maybe he can email me. Maybe I can help. You can email me at rebel@escape.com. That's REBEL at sign escape, ESCAPE.com.
That's a good idea, yes. Okay, why don't you do that? And I think we just lost Rebel there.
No, you didn't. I'm still here.
Okay, I heard a click, and I thought... Okay, well...
By the way, the thing on 13th and 2nd, the payment center, it still works. I was there today, and, you know, I called the Mac Center and told them, and, you know, they don't even understand.
You know, maybe you should go down there in person and try to work it out with them. We're going to go to another phone call. Thanks very much for calling up and sharing that with us. Now let's go to the line that he was supposed to be on. Good evening. You're on the air. Yeah, speak up. Okay, well, I guess the Rebel line is cursed no matter where you go. Let's try this one. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, this is about the DVD scenario.
Oh, splendid. Go ahead.
Question for Scott. Would a time-based corrector, I mean a good one, be able to deal with whatever they're trying to spoof the signal with?
I don't think so. And that's because there's two different strategies they're using. So you're going to have to do a little bit more than that. Actually, what I'm not really clear on myself is how and if the audio is being blocked. I'm not sure that it is. I think what they've done so far is just used this Monroe copy protection circuitry, the two methods I outlined earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd need to have a series of filters. I'm not really sure and certain myself, but I think it would take more than one method to correct it. I do know that the boxes should be out, if they're not already out, very soon. And they'll probably be legal to buy, but not legal to use. just a caveat there for you.
Yeah. Well, if worst comes to worst, you can always open the thing up, whip out a schematic, and sit there and find out where the filtering is and start bypassing.
There's actually something else I've heard. This may be of interest. There are certain monitors that will take the signal in, and then they also have outputs.
Mm-hmm.
And those, I've heard, will also bypass this copy protection.
Well, I mean, I've worked with equipment where it used component color, and on the component color, their filter method wasn't being used because they were sort of getting the raw video.
Right.
And using things like Ferrugia encoders or whatnot, you reassemble the signal, and you allow it to add your own sync, and you just drop the video content in, which allows you to re-record.
Exactly. Putting your own sync, and then you know what? Yeah, that by the way, the where that information is coming from, I've heard, is actually on the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD itself doesn't have any proprietary video standard. It's not like it's NTSC recorded or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it does come with, I think, information about telling sort of about the timing of the pulses,
yeah,
and the color striping.
Because a lot of those equipment, they'll have test points that actually have useful signals on it. And in the old Betacam units, we used to pull out component color by finding the appropriate test point, feeding the signal and re-encoding it, and getting past some of the, you remember the old red shift on the VCR tapes?
Right.
Where it would come out nice and pink if you would try to do a cheapy RF to RF. But at the video line levels, by doing some equalization and some time-based correcting, stealing these basically sort of the pre-filter stages and bypassing them into another piece of equipment. Voila, beautiful picture.
Right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the hackers out there come up with, and I'm sure it's not going to take too much. My guess is a lot of this protection is just out there to keep the general public from taking advantage of...
Now, you're saying they're not using any special... I mean, they're not using a particular standard like PAL or CCAM or anything in general?
No, the DVD itself, so far as I understand this, you can take a DVD and go to Europe and put it in their players, and you'll get the same picture. And all the circuitry that handles that is in the player themselves.
It just sounds like it uses the same data stream, but you're using a different computer to read it.
Right, exactly.
You know,
the data's the same on the DVD. It's just the video.
But basically the intercept points you'd be looking for in the United States would be somehow where the NTSC encoding is working.
Right. One thing I'm curious about is whether these players actually have the capability of going from NTSC to PAL on the fly.
Mm.
I think they do, but I think my guess is it's... In our own tests, we noticed that there was sort of like a menu for it,
mm-hmm.
where you could select, say, NTSC or PAL or CCAM,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't let you. It was like locked on NTSC.
It might not have the circuitry. I mean, they might write a common piece of stuff. I've seen this before. They write a common piece of software, especially in the television industry. I mean, most of the stuff in the United States is using what's called the RS-170A standard. And a lot of times you'll see menus where, for example, a company in Japan will make it for actually everybody, anywhere you want in the world. And you'll get a menu, but the actual hardware can't be addressed because the actual module's missing. When you go to it, the software's smart enough to know, hey, that module doesn't exist. I can't transmit a PAL signal or a CCAM signal.
Right, certainly. It also could be the case where the software's on the chips and the hardware's there, but they dumb it down for the different models.
Yeah, well,
it's not the case just because of the expense involved.
Yeah, the extra hardware wouldn't be worth it. They'd probably direct it at one of each of the three or four markets. They might be, trying to, it would be cheaper to just have the drop-in model. Okay, this is being exported to U.S. and Canada, and this is going, to Europe or whatnot.
Right.
Or
but it's
England.
Nice to know that your DVD is good wherever you go. So that's something to, a nice change from a VHS tape.
Yeah, well, that's because the encoding's right on the tape. Now you're going for a data stream, and you're just changing you're just having, they're all using the same reading technology, and then the transmit technology where they step it up to whatever television standard that's local isn't really a big stretch.
Right.
Whereas before they actually encoded the tape with the standard, the NTSC standard is encoded on a VHS tape, which is why it can't be used everywhere.
Right. Sierra, Manuel, this is the joys of digital.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like that. We've moved into a new era.
Yeah.
But thanks so much for the call, sir.
Okay.
All right, we'll see if we can fit in a couple more, talking about DVDs and the future of mankind. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, great. Before I ask my DVD question, I did have a possible suggestion for that desperate caller about maybe 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
Hopefully it's something can help him, because it promotes something else besides WBAI. But Governor Pataki, for whatever good this does a live call-in show called Ask the Governor every third Thursday, which happens to be 2 days from now, by coincidence, every third Thursday of the month. It's on CBS AM, and it's from 7 to 8, and it's an 800 number, 1-800-AM-88-CBS, and try to be on the phone at least 6:59, because it's very... very competitive to get through to him, but at least you could bring it to him on the statewide radio and coerce him into...
You think the governor might step in here?
Coerce him into saying that he's either going to do something or give it to one of the bureaucratic hierarchies. Now, my DVD question, I actually hate television and I hate movies. I only go to Broadway, but I was interested in the possibility of 3D on the horizon, or at least something approaching 3D. And the only reason I brought that up is because one of the networks I've been hearing over the air was supposed to have a two-day 3D special. I think it passed, but I think it was either last week, maybe Thursday and Friday, they were going to be doing 3 hours each of so-called 3D shows. So I am curious about the possibility of the illusion of 3D on the horizon.
Wow, gosh, that's, I don't know how
speculatively much... speaking, I would just say that, I guess, DVD would certainly, move in that direction, just because anything that's going to involve, three-dimensional pictures, which will probably be some sort of holographic TV system, is going to involve a lot of information that you're going to have to move really quickly. So in that respect, I guess, DVDs are a step in that direction.
They've been trying to push 3D on us now for about 50 years, and it's never quite, IMAX and all is pretty cool, but, you know, I don't think it's ever really going to catch on that much. Do you?
I don't know. I think when 3D becomes what we expect it to be, which is basically like the holodeck in Star Trek, then I think we're going to catch on real quick. But if it's going to involve funny glasses or some helmet you have to wear, I don't think anyone's going to go for that.
Can't handle funny glasses. Or And it makes you dizzy, too, after a while.
It's very disorienting.
That's why those films are only about 30 minutes long.
Right.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm on the air?
You're on the air right now.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't hear it on the radio.
Well, after you hang up the phone, go to the radio, and you'll catch the last 2 seconds of what you just said. Good evening. You're on the air.
All right. What about the old Hello, Eric?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, the old VCRs. What's going to happen with that? I mean, the old tapes, and what, are we still going to have that come, you know, use?
Well, it's interesting. Emmanuel, have you gone to the record store lately?
I try to stay away from that.
Well, if you do, you'll notice there aren't too many LPs anymore.
So what's going to happen to home recording? That's going to be a thing of the past?
No, I think, well, I think there's such a huge installed base of VHS equipment that you have nothing to worry about for years.
Right.
But just as LPs went the way of, you know, eventually you're going to go into a store and it's going to be DVDs, and Blockbusters will only have DVDs. You have nothing to worry about for years,
I guarantee you. Yeah, but ultimately you're saying, no, people will not be able to tape things.
No, that'll always be there, just as you can go into the store right now and buy cassettes to tape stuff.
First of all, you're going to be able to write to DVDs pretty soon once the technology is released.
All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay.
Well, one thing, Emmanuel, if we have any time, I just wanted to mention that another thing about these DVDs is every movie is its own proposition, and when you go and buy a DVD movie, they're not all going to be as good as they could be. It has to do with how they're made how much trouble they took to go from film to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
So you may buy Twister and get one result, and you'll buy another movie and get a completely different result. So that's something to be aware of.
I just can't wait till we make home DVDs, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Have all different camera angles,
right.
And language translations of your home movies and things like that. That's
camcorder
that's
that
the
records
real,
directly to DVD. That's what everyone wants.
The real potential of this will be realized then.
Sure.
All right, we're out of time, but Scott Skinner, thank you very much for stopping in. And,
hey, thanks for having me.
And saying hi and telling us all about DVDs and the future. And what we have to look forward to. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Off the Hook. Hopefully Fiber Optic will be back by then. Till then, it's Emmanuel Goldstein. Have yourselves good night. Stay tuned for Housing Alpha. Good night.
Rush Limbaugh, Bob Grant. Want a different, fresh outlook? This is Liz Holtzman. Join me every Tuesday beginning May 13th from 2 to 3 in the afternoon for a new, exciting, provocative, and informative show covering the issues important to New Yorkers. Politics, arts, sports, science. As Congresswoman, Brooklyn DA, and New York City Comptroller, I worked on many of the concerns we face today. There'll be lively guests and plenty of room for listener participation. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday from 2 to 3. I'm waiting to talk to you over listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.
Liz Holtzman's on the... I once ran into Liz Holtzman in the Key Food in my neighborhood, and she was buying chicken livers, I think, to make chopped liver, I guess. And she didn't buy the kosher ones. It's a Shonda. Nice Jewish girl like Liz Holtzman. But we welcome her to WBAI, even though she buys the Trafe chicken livers.
Center Community and Labor Report and the Jacob Riis Community School bring you Who Are the Women?